Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to... Hey, Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Cracked Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. If it's a Monday, you know what we're doing on this show. Recapping another fantastic week of ATP Challenger Tour action with our hosts Damian Kust and Jakub Bobro. On today's show, they discuss the end to Liam Brody's seven-year quest for a Challenger title. They discuss why playing clay events at high altitudes changes just about everything. They discuss Thiago Monteiro rebuilding his confidence of late and so much more. It is a fantastic episode. I know all of you listeners are going to enjoy. Of course, if you're looking for recaps of the ATP and WTA Tour level events, head on over to our Mini Break podcast feed. If you're looking to hear from last week's Moselle Open champion and finalist, you can hear my questions, the answers as well from Hubi Hurkacz and Pablo Carreño Busta. We were able to sit on Press Row, offer you all some From the Presser segments that can be found on the Cracked Interviews podcast feed. And of course, for all of our content, just head on over to our website, crackrackets.com, trying to ensure all of you listeners have all of the information you need to thoroughly enjoy being a tennis fan, to thoroughly enjoy the home stretch of this 2021 season. But of course, you came here to hear about the ATP Challenger Tour. So without further ado, let's get to it. Here's this week's episode with hosts Damian Kust and Jakub Bobro.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Challenger Tour podcast. I'm actually going to be discussing the recaps of the tournaments by myself today, but Jakub is going to be back for match of the week, upset of the week, and the previews. We're sorry for that, but well, it was a bit of an issue with his alarm clock. He's also ill, which you're going to probably hear. I'm going to edit out most of the coughing, but you're probably going to hear some. It sounded quite serious, so let's just hope that Jakub is going to be fine for next week's episode. And we had five different Challenger events this week on three continents, which is great to see. Obviously, a lot of workload for us, and you know, Sunday was very busy, but that's what we love about the Challenger Tour, that it's so overwhelming and that it pretty much plays out all day. You start with Kazakhstan, not this week, but you start with Kazakhstan, you finish with South America or the States. Actually, there wasn't a single event in Australia this year, so you know, back in the day or in Asia. Like Asia, not Kazakhstan, but Asia, like China, Japan. So back in the day, back in 2019, it was even more, you know, it spanned over even more hours. But anyhow, I have this in alphabetical order, I think. So I'm going to start with Ambato, which was actually the last final to end yesterday, where Thiago Agustin Tirante won the final against Juan Pablo Varillas, 7-5, 7-5. Tirante was my pick for the title, and Varillas was Jakub's pick for the title. So obviously very happy. I'm obviously very happy about this, and I'm going to be just 1 point shy of Jakub right now. It's 8-9. So getting closer. There's not that much time left until the end of the year. So I really need to I really need to get back at him in that competition. But anyhow, Tirante was, honestly, the altitude clay is a bit of a double-edged sword for him, because his return is not great, especially the backhand one, as the backhand is not a, you know, is a flaw of his game in general. And in the first two rounds, he won them against Rodriguez and Gomez Herrera, but never broke serve. Still, he somehow came through both in three sets, and then played much better as the week went on. He defeated Harald Meltzer, then Facundo Mena, the last week's title winner from Quito. And then he also defeated Juan Pablo Varillas. Why did I say it's a double-edged sword then? Because his serve is great, and it also helped him massively to get through this week. Against Varillas, he actually had to save only two break points. I was kind of worried that maybe if the third set comes, he just had so much more workload than Varillas during this week. So maybe that was going to favor the Peruvian, but he managed to close it in two. I think Tirante is honestly such a huge talent, because there are so many clear liabilities in his game, but he still can make it work because of, you know, simply the potential that he has. Basically, if you let him dictate with the forehand, especially inside out, the point is practically done. Like, you're not getting back to the rally. And he's such a tough opponent to play, and he's almost going to be in the top 200 from Monday, in Monday's edition of the ATP rankings. As I mentioned, Varillas had a very good run as well. I feel like, you know, this week was probably the last South American challenger where the quality was, you know, slightly weaker than what we usually see on the challenger circuit. So Varillas was a big favorite to come through to the finals, but then again, he was 2 points away from getting eliminated in the first round against Roberto Quiroz. It was still close. It's still very tough to get good results on the Challenger Tour. Also, Alexis Gauthier got to the quarters and lost to Facundo Mena again, even though he was lucky loser for this event. Honestly, I wasn't that impressed with Gauthier, even though he got some great wins over Gonzalo Lama, Andre Martin. But I just felt like he's one of the guys who really benefited from the whole tournament being sort of weaker, also in very specific conditions. I think his depth was pretty much all over the place. And I don't know. I mean, this week he's playing again. Well, he's not anymore. He was supposed to play in Lima in the qualies, but he lost to Nicolas Barrientos 6-0, 6-0. I didn't see that one, so I can't really say more about it. But anyhow, a fantastic week for Tirante, which I'm very happy to see. I've been a pretty big follower of his talent since he was the junior world number one. And it's great that at 20 years old, he was able to win his third final, which is significantly faster than Liam Brody, who won his first challenger title on the eighth try. And actually, his first final came back 7 years ago in, what was it, Charlottesville, I think. Yeah, so it took him 7 years to complete that feat, and it clearly meant a lot. And I mean, he's had such a good year. This was actually the third final this year. He lost to Benjamin Bonzi in Potchefstroom, and then lost to Andreas Seppi in Biela. Brody had some fantastic wins this year, like against Hubert Hurkacz at the Olympics. He's simply so solid, and, you know, I don't think he can be realistically like a top 50 player, but he was definitely the player that, you know, came close so many times. And like, compared to, for example, Yannick Madden, who also has 7 finals, it just feels like Madden's runs were so short-lived compared to Brody. Like, Brody is gonna be around this level for a long time, and he has been. His first final came 7 years ago, and it's great that he finally got it. He actually never lost a set all week, despite playing some awesome indoor hard players like Rankumar Ramanathan, Andrei Kuznetsov, also Marc-Andre Ahuesler in the finals. He had a bit of a case of early nerves in the final, which is understandable because it's been a big mental block for him, clearly. But he managed to get over that, and it's definitely like probably the best day of his career, I imagine. Yeah, he also played Stricker in the semis, who had another fantastic run. And how well he can play that aggressive game and how well he can serve at his age is really astonishing. He scored a great win over Henri Laaksonen, but Stricker got injured in the semis, played just 8 games against Liam Brody. And my pick for the title was Tim van Rijthoven, who had 2 match points against Wessler in the semis, but failed to convert them in a second set tiebreak. And it was Wessler in the finals, who also has a very natural indoor hardcourt game. Funny thing, he actually had a 3-0 record in Challenger Finals, so I guess that only makes Brody's win even more impressive. What else did I want to pick up on from here? Probably not much. Yeah, I'm struggling. Yeah, okay, Jakub's pick was Pierre Gerber, who pulled out. So yeah, he couldn't get the points there. In Braga, which is another event, we had Thiago Monteiro winning his 6th challenger title, first since Punta del Este 2020, which was in January. So quite a long time. As you probably know, he was struggling with a lot of confidence issues recently. I still don't think he's playing as well as he can. Like, I really miss the days when he was able to use his lefty topspin forehand more aggressively. He really lacked it in the final. He really lacked it against Arnaboldi in the quarters. Like, obviously, Andrea Arnaboldi is not a natural clay courter. Like, he feels good on the surface, but his style isn't suited for that. And Monteiro just shouldn't be leaving him this much freedom to dictate, to play what Arnaboldi does best, which is, well, basically to hit a big forehand and go to the net. And Monteiro should be disallowing him that. And even the final against Milojevic, Monteiro played, it was a 7-5 victory, but it took 151 minutes, I believe, which honestly, it shouldn't have been such a mess. Like, Milojevic just didn't have enough weapons to hit through Monteiro, but Monteiro, in this form, he still manages to make things like that close. And I don't know, I'm not too excited about his form, but you still need to be a very good player to defeat Thiago Monteiro, even though his style is now more physical than reliant on the topspin forehand. He crushed Hugo Gaston in the semis, which actually we couldn't see because it was moved indoors. There was a lot of rain in Braga this week. So I can't really say anything about that, but I guess with how heavy Monteiro plays the ball, the indoor conditions probably favored him more than the Frenchman, right? Milojevic got to the final, which is actually, he was in the finals like 2 weeks ago in Banja Luka, so he's doing very well at the moment, but his run was also very tough. He played Santiago Fa Rodriguez Taverna, which is someone I need to watch more, honestly, and I hope I'm going to be able to this week, but he saved 6 match points on return. In that second round, I rewatched the match points because I did not see the match, and well, most of them were sort of choked by Rodriguez Taverna, like simple forehand errors, but there were a couple on which Milojevic hit a great backhand on the line or something like that. So, you know, both a choke, but also at the same time a very clutch performance from Milojevic. But as I said, I think Monteiro was definitely the strongest player this week, but there are some things in his performance that I'm not too excited about. But I mean, winning titles helps your confidence, and if he can, I was always under the impression that Thiago Monteiro was going to win like a Golden Swing ATP event at some point of his career. It hasn't really happened. I don't know if I believe in that anymore. I'm just, maybe I sound like, I don't want to be diminishing his achievement in Braga, but I just always feel like Monteiro should be doing more, and that's why I'm a little bit, Like when I was talking about Brody, I was only praising. When I was talking about Tirante, that was only praising. But I feel like Monteiro should be doing more. Like Tirante will be doing more. Brody is probably doing what he can, but Monteiro, you know, he just feels like he has more potential than what he's showed us. Even though he's like what 27. So I don't know, maybe it's gonna happen, but ever since he defeated Tsonga at Rio in 2016, I just always felt like he could, you know, win a Golden Swing event in his career, and it hasn't really happened. So hopefully that Braga run can give him a lot of confidence and can make him excel once again. He had very nice runs at the French this year and last year, so maybe there's something there. And Bucharest was my second pick, second point that I earned this week. And it was for the 8th seed, Izsi Lehecka. Honestly, the top half was at the same time strong, but it really felt like Travalia Lehecka was a match for the title at that point. But Travalia had a much tougher road. He played Flavio Coboli and Vitaly Sachko, who have both been excellent on the Challenger Tour this year. And Lehecka just steamrolled his first three opponents, but it was Alexei Vatutin, then Dragos Nicolas Madaras, a qualifier who is Swedish but also has some Romanian background, I think. I think he has both citizenships, but I'm not exactly sure about that. But he also played Nicolas David Ionel, so a Romanian wildcard in the quarters. Ionel had a good run, but frankly, the draw really opened up after Zdenek Kolář lost. And Lehecka Travalia was actually very high quality. We've talked about Travalia not being very motivated in recent weeks, like the losses he had to Colarini, to charge the first set, he pretty much tanked them, sort of. So it was refreshing to see Travalia really care this week, because against Coboli, against Sachko, against Lehecka, these were really high quality matches. And in the bottom half, we've had an absolute stunner in Kokkinakis Emery. Kokkinakis was actually Jakub's pick at the title, but once again, like, Emery played a fantastic match. His energy levels went down in the third set. He still came very close to closing it. He had a match point, but you know, he just couldn't really get it done, but really forced Kokkinakis to play his best. And then Kokkinakis played Filip Horański, and it just felt like he never really had the intensity required, especially in the third set, probably because of that three-hour match against Emery. But as for Kokkinakis, honestly, I feel like people are still thinking of him in the category that, you know, if he's healthy, he's going to be top 50 in no time. And we can clearly see that he is not at that level. Like, this year he's mostly been a quarter finalist than a title list at Challenger level. And it's not only on clay, which probably is thought of as his worst surface, which I don't think it's true. I think he's actually looked more impressive on clay this year than he's done, well, definitely than he's been on grass, but probably even on hard courts. And it's getting clear that his return is a weakness, and a pretty big one at that, and that he's simply not going to win challenger after challenger. I don't know if without all the injuries in the past, maybe he would have been much better at the moment. But it's getting clear that while he's still underranked, he's not as underranked as some people think. And I'm going to be, you know, a little bit more cautious picking him from now on. Horański made the finals, which is at the same time surprising, but he gets that run like once or twice a year. He really pulls the week together and has these runs. He was a finalist in Quimper at the beginning of the season, where he lost very easily to Sebastian Korda. And honestly, once again, the final was sort of uncompetitive. He fought back a bit from 0-5 in the first set, but lost 6-3, 6-2 to Izsi Lehecka. And by far the most impressive win Lehecka had this week was against Stefano Travalia, but he didn't lose a set, which is very obviously super exciting. I am very, very interested in how Lehechka's career progresses from here. He's improved physically, I think, like comparing to when I saw him in Poznań to when I saw him in Szczecin two months later. I think he really got more muscular. He's simply turning into a physical beast, which is what his style needs, I feel like. That clean ball striking he has is really excellent. And if he can continue improving his serve and also work on his game on other surfaces, which I guess is going to be, you know, something that he can do in the latter part of the season when there are no more clay court challengers in Europe, then out of the young Czechs, as we actually talked about with Jakub like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think he's the one that has the most potential. He's the one that is probably a lock for top, I want to say 50. I mean, top 100 is not bold at all, I feel. Top 50 is slightly bolder, so I don't know. Maybe top 50 is a stretch, but to me, he's at this point in time a lock for top 50 at some point in the future. That might be a wrong prediction, but you know, that's what you're here for, to listen to our crappy predictions, right? Yeah, and we have Columbus left, which, as I found out, is actually, well, thanks to Yash, I don't think he'll be listening, but anyhow, he told me that this is played at the same venue that the Ohio State Buckeyes play college tennis, which explains how well Wolf and especially Torpegaard do here, because I think Torpegaard finished, his record on the Challenger Tour is like 60-45, his win-loss record, and it's 34-9 in Ohio. These are actually just two events, Columbus and Cleveland. Well, mostly Columbus, but Cleveland as well. And in the rest of events, Challenger Tour events, not only indoors, but also clay and other stuff, it's 26-34. So it's a huge difference. And I always just figured, I don't know, it's some Ohio magic. But it turns out that's, you know, that the explanation, at least for the Columbus results, not for Cleveland, is that they really know these courts, both Wolf and Torpegaard, even if Wolf's record wasn't as skewed, and he actually does well in other states of America as well, not only in America as well. But Stefan Kozlov defeated them both, and honestly, the way he was able to stick around despite losing the opening set to both Torpegaard and Wolf, but also to Max Purcell in the finals. All of them, Wolf, Torpegaard, Purcell, they played fantastic first sets, but they weren't able to close the match against Kozlov. And Stefan Kozlov had a great summer. Back 4 years ago, he was regarded as one of the premium American talents, which when you look at his game, you just really don't know where it was coming from. Obviously from all the junior success, but he has such a unique playing style, such weird strokes, and it's super exciting to watch him sort of battle that on the court. Like, obviously not, you don't battle against your own technique, but he needs to do everything so differently to other players that I just it's a fun riddle to watch, even for the viewer. And he was very good behind his serve this week. You know, with his technique, it's not easy to convert an advantageous position in the rally, but he was doing that really well, especially with the help of his volleying, which was really excellent. And he got his first title in almost 4 years, not even challenger, at any level. And it comes after a couple of really dreadful seasons, and it's hard to pinpoint what's better this year. Maybe it's his attitude. Maybe it's how much work he's putting in, simply. But it's whatever it is, it's clearly working. And Kozlov is really, really good at the moment. He's almost back to the top 250 of the ATP rankings. And it's, you know, compared to what he played in 2019, 2020, it's just night and day. So Wolf was actually excellent as well. That was my pick for the title. And he lost to Kozlov, but also scored a fantastic win against Sandgren in the quarters and just smashed his first two opponents. Jakub's pick was Max Purcell, who reached the finals. No more forehand slicing all match as Nursultan, but he's still obviously using that shot a lot, but he got the trust back in his forehand. I feel like with him, it's again, a lot depends on the confidence. When he got the break in the first set against Kozlov and he was able to front run, he played this fun old all-court style, was really throwing himself at Kozlov. And then the sets 2 and 3, he just committed way too many errors, frankly. He barely survived the semis against Aleksandar Vukic, who should have won to set both sets, honestly. In one, he had like three set points, and in the other one, he served for it. But it was a really poor performance from Vukic in terms of the clutch moments. Like the finishes to the sets, he was making very straightforward errors. There's one volley that I think will haunt him. He played like a smash, which Purcell barely got back, and he had the whole court open for a volley and just terribly botched it. It went wide. And just not clutch at all, although these were two very solid weeks for Vukic as well. He made semis in both Columbus and Cary. We'll see where he plays next, because there's not going to be an American challenger until Las Vegas, I think, which is on the 25th of October, some late October, I think. So anyhow, I think that's going to be all for the recaps. Oh, actually, I wanted to mention the doubles in two events. Kozlov won in Columbus with Peter Polanski, and that's a very nice pair. They finished runner-up in Cary and Columbus. Then now they won in Columbus. And I felt like they just worked really well together. We're going to see if Polanski maybe gets to focus a bit more on doubles, because singles hasn't been working out for him in such a long time. Even here in Columbus, he played Jason Kubler in the first round, which is a tough draw, honestly. Polanski has been slightly better recently, but still way below his regular level. And in Bucharest, I've actually talked about this pairing a couple of times here, which is Ruben Gonzalez and Hunter Johnson. I talked about not being able to understand how Hunter Johnson has no challenger titles, and he finally does. And I don't know, I mean, the Johnson brothers, when you watch them, are just such typical doubles players. Like, you can just see that skill set required to play this discipline. And I really had no clue why Zdeněk Kolář has 12 challenger doubles titles and Hunter or Yates Johnson, his twin brother, had none. They actually stopped playing together in like June. I think Yates is in the States. He didn't even come to Europe. And Hunter Johnson has been playing with some different partners, mostly Ruben Gonzalez. He also played with Fabian Fallert, I think. But Gonzalez-Johnson is definitely one of my favorite challenger pairings. In Poznań, they defeated Valko Zieliński, saving three match points. And then they lost in the semis to Drzewiecki-Vukic. But Gonzalez-Johnson is a pairing that I really enjoy watching, even though, as you probably know, if you've listened to a couple of episodes, I'm not really, and neither is Jakub. We're not watching that much doubles. Mostly as there's no time for it, honestly. Especially when you have five events per week. After you've watched like a solid amount of hours of tennis per day, doubles is simply not something that excites me enough to prioritize it. But Ruben Gonzalez, Hunter Johnson is definitely a pairing I tune in to watch, because I find them extremely entertaining, and they also have very classic volleying techniques. So now we're going to go to a different segment, because we're going to have Jakub back for match of the week, for upset of the week, and also for the predictions and previews of next week's events.
So welcome back, Jakub.
How are you feeling? No, okay, let's just go to the match of the week at the upset of the week. Maybe what's your match of the week?
So my match of the week, I'm going for Filip Horanský over Thanasi Kokkinakis. Horanský, I'm unfortunately unable to review his full run, but what a great run it was for him. I did not expect it whatsoever with this season. But yes, he beat Thanasi Kokkinakis 7-6, 4-6, 6-2. Pretty high quality. Kokkinakis, obviously, he's sort of become more of like a regular quarterfinalist rather than somebody that we're picking to win all the time, as we did earlier in the year, unfortunately. But it's still a very good win. He's showed some quality on clay this year. So that's my match of the week.
I also went with a Kokkinakis match, but against Calvin Emery. Honestly, the quality was sick. Emery played fantastic for the first two sets. Then his energy levels sort of went down, but it was so fun to watch. I mean, Emery, when he's on, is absolutely brilliant. He has so much flamboyance, and Kokkinakis really had to... I honestly believe he lost to Horanský because he played that much earlier, because just another third set, another very high quality, very draining third set was simply too much. And the drama with Kokkinakis saving a match point, then winning in the tiebreak, and sort of Emery barely, well, maybe not barely walking, but clearly down on energy in the latter parts of the third set, but Kokkinakis still somehow hanging on, and Kokkinakis simply having to go for a lot to win this match. That honestly, after this one finished on what was it, Thursday or Wednesday, I wrote on Twitter that I feel like match of the week is already done for me, and yeah, that I stand by that opinion. And what's your upset of the week?
Upset of the week. I had a tough time picking. But yeah, I've gone for Dominik Stefan Stricker over Andrei Laaksonen in the second round, which Stricker, obviously he won Lugano at the start of the year, but his challenger performances since then had been kind of middling. He wasn't really showing much on clay at all. So but by the time we got back to indoor hard, he obviously beat Jean Vierre in the first round. But Laaksonen, he looked pretty good against Latko, so I thought that he was going to win that, and Stricker surprised me there, and then went on to have a pretty nice semi-final run.
Okay. I would have been surprised if Laaksonen won, honestly, but I can see why you went with this, because there's really, despite five events, there really wasn't much to pick in terms of upsets. The bookies had Gabashvili over Kolar as the biggest one, but honestly, I mean, we often talk about back-to-back, how tough it is to go back-to-back and how tough it is to follow up a title with another good run. And I mean, it's just not that shocking. And there was also a big one in for the bookies. Katarina over Basic was a big one, which is just crazy. Like, I think we even talked about it like a month ago that Mirza Basic is super overrated by the bookies, yeah. And
for some reason
the odds were crazy on this one. I just, Katarina has been so good on the ITF tour. Like, he's the classic player that is too good for ITFs but can't break through at challengers, and I just don't see how this is an upset, like, at all. But that was the second biggest one in terms of odds. And I actually, for the very first time in this podcast, I went with an upset that isn't really a match. I went with Pierre-Yves Herbert's withdrawal.
I mean, come on.
I just felt like if he cared enough to sign up, like if his singles form of late has been so poor, not to sign up for a challenger, then, well, obviously he played Prague, but that was a different case because there were no main tour events and all. And I just felt like maybe, you know, if he signed up, he was gonna play, like, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm cheating here, but
yeah, I just really didn't know an option, to be honest. I mean, now I'm also picking Pierre Gerber. So, I mean, Yeah, that,
and it was upsetting for you as well, right? Because you
definitely upsetting for me. I was not happy about that in the slightest. It's like, come on, at least play. Like, even if you're gonna lose first round, it's better than, because it's happened to me like back to back weeks. I think, right? I didn't have, or maybe not back to back, but I had it. I think I had like Echeverri 2 weeks ago or something.
You had two guys this week. You had Eliáš as well, right? In Braga.
Oh yeah. And
so two of your picks didn't even make it to court. So.
Well,
and I also two of my picks got a point. So yeah, a rough week for you, especially as you came so close with Purcell and Varillas. A very good week actually for both of us prediction wise, and it also wasn't like the top seeds. We actually had some really good picks like Lehečka, Purcell, Tirante, guys who weren't exactly, you know, the number one seed, the number two seed, but. Van Rijthoven, I guess, was a good pick for me as well. He missed match points in the semis. And anyhow,
should we start with Orléans?
Sure, the biggest one there is.
Yes, the biggest one, and what a field it has. Honestly, we have Hugo Humbert as the top seed, world number 26 at a challenger, which will be great to see. His section has Quentin Elise. In the first round, he has Gregor Barrère, Denis Novak, who could be potentially dangerous. His other seed is Pierre-Hugues Herbert, who obviously pulled out last week, so we don't really know what form he's coming into with this week. In the next section, we have Arthur Rinneknecht as the third seed, playing against Antoine Huang in the first round. Then we have a Spanish derby between Verdasco and Feliciano Lopez, which will be interesting to see. I don't know how many more of these we're going to get between these two guys. They both seem very much towards the end of the career. We also have a pretty tough first round. Ernest Gobis playing with Mansa Fulin on indoor hard will definitely be fun to watch. And the winner of that will get to play Corentin Moutet, who's in with the wildcard as well. Next section, we have Richard Gasquet as the fourth seed. Playing qualifier, he will then face either Luca Puy or Elias Emer. Next section, the other seed in the section is Jiří Veselý, the number five seed. And then we have Marco Ranta Bilo, the other two guys in the section. And finally, Benjamin Bonzi plays Harold Mayo in the first round, which will definitely be interesting to see. We talked about Mayo before on this podcast. Young guy, had a difficult year with injuries. We also have Olga Rune playing Jill Simon, the number seven seed, which, I mean, Rune should definitely win that match, to be honest, with Simon's performance this year. And we have Zizou Bergs, who has obviously had some incredible performances this year already on indoor hard. So he's sort of back to his best surface, so definitely should be a contender here as well. What do you think of the draw?
Yeah, there were actually, once again, the three French juniors in the qualies, but all of them lost first round, so not much to talk about there. I guess Kuznetsov is the only the only guy who could really go far here in a draw of this quality, as you said. I'm looking at Verdasco Lopez history. They first played in 2004. So it's pretty ridiculous that it's happening on the Challenger Tour this time. I mean, obviously, it never, you know, their first matchup was a tour level meeting at Kitzbühel. So it never happened at a tournament of this level. They met in a semi once at Quito and twice at the US Open, from what I see. A pretty ridiculous matchup. This is actually a pretty tough draw for Humbert, I feel like, with how, you know, off he's been on his confidence. It's actually obviously a very weird decision to go here than to Sofia. I guess maybe he just wants to rebuild. Maybe there's some appearance fee as well. Who knows?
Possible.
But Alice is definitely not a player you want to see in your first round. So I wasn't, I don't know, it just felt off to pick him. For me. So, you know, I've had many times where I should have picked Benjamin Bonzi this year and I didn't. You got a few points of him. And I just figured it wouldn't be wise not to go for Bonzi again. So I went with Bonzi.
Yes. Surprisingly, I'm not going for Bonzi this time. I feel like it's a really tough section.
It is.
Yeah. Was in the second round. I don't really like it for him. What I do kind of like is Artur Rinderknecht's draw. He does have Antoine Huang in the first round, but the second round of Vedasco Lopez, I feel like he should win. Really, at this point, the guys don't have much left in them, to be fully honest. So yeah, I'm going for Artur Rinderknecht here.
Yeah, a very fair pick. I was also thinking about Rune after what he showed in Metz this week. Came very close to beating Karenia Busta, and I just feel like he definitely could win this. But as I said, I mean, I missed on Bonzi so many times, and I really want to see him get the record. So
yeah, that'll be absolutely great to see. Next up, let's go to Sibiu.
Sure.
Top seed in Sibiu, Stefano Travaglia, opens against Lukasz Rosol. He actually has a really nice draw here. Rosol and then Vlad Andrei Danku, or qualifier. Then two other qualifiers in the section, and then Zdeněk Kolář against Mariusz Kopil, which should be pretty fun first round to watch. On clay, different styles and all. Next section, we have Damir Dzungor playing wildcard Petros Tsitsipas. Of course, why not? Of course, he's in there for no reason.
Actually, there is a reason. I read that, it's a sort of a deal with a Croatian challenger. I'm assuming it's the one in October in Lošinj, or however you read it. And basically, that tournament is going to give a wildcard to Cornea. And Sibiu is gonna give a wild card to someone that Croatian challenger chose, and that Croatian challenger chose Petros Tsitsipas.
That's so ridiculous. Why? They could have picked, you know, Ajduković, for example. I feel like he would have definitely.
Ajduković maybe will get in normally. Yeah. And I guess,
oh yeah, actually, looking at the cutoff, you probably would have gotten in.
Yeah, I think Ajduković is just injured.
They have their own players. I don't know why they're giving this wild card to Petros.
Yep.
Like, kind of ridiculous. Anyway, in the section is also Alexander Edler, who you quite like a lot, playing sure. Jeffrey Blancano. Then we have Sumi Nagal as the eighth seed, playing Lucas Midler. Very fun first round between Jiří Lehečka and Filip Christian Gianu. Next section, we have Alex Molčan playing Ricardo Bonadio, Vít Kopšiva or Daniel Petrovic in the second round. In the section, we have Stanasi Kokinakis as a seventh seed, plays Maxime Matterer, also Ergi Kirkin and Alexei Vatutin. In the final section, we have Radu Albot, the second seed, plays Vitali Sačko, which upset alert, pretty much. I feel like Sačko might win that first round, actually. Vlad Viktor Cornea plays Franco Agamenone. And their sixth seed, Marc-André Hissler, who it says to me that he's the defending champion.
He is, yeah. Defeated Echeverry last year.
He opens up against Yele Cells and then has G Clark or qualifier in the second round. So who's caught your eye here? Who are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing Calvin Emery again after what he's done this week against Kokinakis, but he retired in the first round of the qualies. There's also Nicolas David Yonel, who honestly I'm not that excited about. I know he's made the quarters this week, but it was mostly a very soft draw in that section. And I mean, back in 2019, he won four ITFs in a row for 15Ks. And like the fields really weren't that strong. And ever since, I think he's won like one. So I don't know. I'm just not that excited about him anymore. I think Gianu is definitely the Romanian talent to look at right now. Corneja is in the wild card as well. As you said, I'm also expecting Sachko to beat Albots, and even if not Sachko, then Agamenone, I guess. It's a really tough draw for Albot, honestly. If he wants to regain confidence, that's very rough. I feel like we're gonna go for the same pick here, actually. I guess I was looking at guys like Kolarz or Trevalia, but Molchan, I mean, really speaks to me here. He obviously hasn't played in a while. Well, at least, you know, on the Challenger Tour, because did he play Davis Cup?
He lost straight sets to Garin. But honestly, Garin was playing pretty well in that match. It's also indoor hard as opposed to play here.
Since the US Open, he hasn't played a match other than against Garin, no. Right? Yeah, so he's coming back to clay after a while. But I feel like this is a good draw to, you know, sort of get tuned into it if he beats Bonadio, who's obviously very solid. But I don't know, Molchan has been so good this year that I feel like he's the premium pick here.
Yeah, I'm also going for Alex Molchan. I quite like his draw. Bonadio in the first round. Kopshiva hasn't been in great form. Neither has Petrovic. So through the first two rounds, I quite like it. Even through the quarters, I mean, Kokkinakis has been sort of, you know, middling, to be completely honest. Yeah. Struggle to break out. So Alex Molchan for me as well. Yeah,
people are still expecting Kokkinakis to be like, you know, top 50, top 60 in a moment. And I think it's getting just increasingly clear that he's not playing at that level. Like,
yeah.
And that's all.
All right, let's go to Lima. That's the one I have next up here. Top seed Francisco Cerundolo opens against Mateus Puccinelli de Almeida. It should be pretty fun. Puccinelli has sort of broken through onto the challengers this year, so that's been fun to see. Potentially in the second round, Menendez Maceiras or qualifier. The other seed in the section is Renzo Olivo playing Lucas Catarina, and then we have General Alberto Oliveri or Roberto Quiroz. We also have Daniel Altmaier, who's come down to South America, which should be fun to see. Plays against Guido Andreozzi, and then potentially has Nicolas Kicker in the second round. So tough draw, I think. In the section, there's also fifth seed Hugo Delien plays Nick Hart, and Nicolas Alvarez and Facundo Mena. next section, we have Juan Pablo Varias as the fourth seed, opens against Pedro Sakamoto. A couple of qualifiers in here. Then we have seventh seed Juan Pablo Fikovic plays Gerald Melzer. And the other two guys in the section are Oriol Roca Batalla and Eduard Estrella Lobato. Final section, we have Juan Manuel Cerundolo as the second seed. So we have top two seeds, Cerundolo brothers. He plays a wild card in Gonzalo Bueno, who I've actually not heard of before. We have a very fun first round here. I just noticed it. Thiago Agustin Tirante, last week's champion, against Gonzalo Lama, the Chilean wild card. We also have eighth seed Camilo Hugo Carabelli, plays Nicolas Mejia, and Julian Lentz plays another wild card in Conor Huertas del Pino. So lots to get into this draw. This is quite exciting. What did you think of it?
Yeah, finally we get a good draw in South America, and it's only going to be, I guess, better or at least this good from now on, since the South American Challenger Tour is basically going to be week after week from now on. The breakout performer of the past 2 weeks, Alexis Gauthier, was also in the qualies, and he actually lost 6-0 to Barrientos yesterday. I did not see that, so I can't really speak on that, but okay. I mean, I really don't know what to say about this result. But there are a couple of guys who already played Ambato or Cuito, and they should be, you know, they should have a lot of match practice, like Gomez Herrera or Johan Nicolas. But, you know, here we have a couple of really good seeds, like the Cerundolos, which is, by the way, a very rare occurrence that two brothers are the top two seeds. They're also going to be very, very close to the top 100 at the moment. Juan Manuel, I think, is slightly closer at the moment. I didn't want to go for Francisco because I don't like the first round. But could potentially be dangerous with it being his first match after a while. I also was definitely contemplating Altmaier, but it's a tough section. Like Andreozzi first round, then Kicker. I don't know. Yeah, it just didn't really fill me with confidence. And I went with someone who has a very tough second round, which is, Juan Manuel Cerundo. But Tirante has played two very long weeks. Lama is also probably, he's definitely playing better than his ranking suggests, but I feel like he probably had some sort of a, softer draw to get to Quito finals. I don't think he's quite at that level, and Tirante should be tired. Varillas is also a very good pick again. I don't know. I went with Juan Manuel Cerundolo to get to the top 100 and win another one.
So I'm going with Juan Pablo Varillas. He didn't quite work out for me last week, made it all the way to the final, lost to Tirante, unfortunately. But it doesn't change that he's still in very good form. I quite like his section. I'm not really sure who hurts him there. Maybe Meltzer. He had a decent week last week. So yeah, I'm going for Juan Pablo Varillas once again.
Yeah, Varillas played Fijović in the semis, right? So he's pretty that section is very, very good for him. I honestly don't know why I didn't go for Varillas, but let's
All right, let's go to Lisbon. We have Thiago Monteiro as the top seed, plays Alexander Muller, potentially in the second round, Igor Seisling or Andrea Pellegrino. Also in the section is seventh seed, Alessandro Giannesi, plays Giulio Zeppieri in the first round, then Federico Ferreira Silva and Tristan Lamassine. Second section, we have fourth seed, Andre Martin, plays Roberto Sitsubervi. In the second round, we have two Portuguese wildcards, Goncalo Oliveira and Pedro Araujo. Then we have fifth seed Nikola Milojevic playing qualifier in the second round. Against him is Constantin Lestienne or Elliot Benchentry. Third section, we have third seed Hugo Gaston, plays Francesco Forti. In the second round, he has Robin Haase or Filippo Baldi. Other seeds in the section is sixth seed Cedric Marcel Stebe. And he has Michael Kertz or Nuno Borges in the second round. In the final section, second seed Tara Daniel plays a qualifier. In the second round, he has once again a Portuguese derby there. Wildcard Thiago Cacau or João Domingues. Other seed in the section is Dmitry Popko, plays Lorenzo Giustino. And the other guy in the section is Andrea Arnaboldi. Not the best draws so far, the weakest one for sure, from the ones that we've looked at. Does anybody stand out to you here?
Yeah, from the qualies, I definitely want to see more of Santiago Fa Rodriguez Taverna. He blew 6 match points against Nikola Milojevic this week. I remember him crushing Daniel Michalski, which was quite a bit of a shock to me at that point. But well, he definitely proved it later on. Michalski is also playing in the qualies, and he's gonna take on Lukas Kerch today. But I'm obviously not really looking at him as a potential winner of this event. I don't know. I just look at Monteiro's draw, and even though I don't like going for back-to-back winners, I just don't know who eliminates him from this. Like even the final against Milojevic in Braga, he made it 2.5 hours for 2 sets, but it shouldn't have been that messy, and it just never looked like Milojevic has a chance to win this match realistically. I just feel like to beat Monteiro on clay, you need to have a certain level. You need to probably need to have some big weapons most of the time. that's why someone like Moraing did it in Toln. So I just don't know who beats him. So I'm gonna stick with Monteiro and hope he goes back to back. By the way, idiotic scheduling from Andre Martin. Can we just say that? Like, he went to South America for 2 weeks and then came back here, even though there was more to play in South America.
I assume that maybe he just wasn't very happy with the conditions because his results there were really, really poor.
He must have been signed up for this event long before he knew how he did on altitude clay.
I guess, but I don't really get it either. It's very odd because he usually stays there for a long time through the
And there's like a event a week after week. It's not like, you know, there's gonna be South America is going anywhere. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and soon enough, like there will be no more European clay for him to play. It will all be indoor hard. So does he plan to play the indoor hard as opposed to the South American clay? I'm very confused. So we'll see. Maybe he'll play Bratislava for once, but probably unlikely. I have no idea what he's doing. Is there?
I saw the calendar for the first 2 weeks of November, where Bratislava is obviously involved. Let me see if there's a clay challenger in Montevideo. The week before there's one in Guayaquil. So yeah, there's pretty much no point for him to come back to Europe.
Yeah. So
yeah, and no clay court challengers in Europe in the first 2 weeks of November. So.
So he's so far scheduled to only play Naples. In the next month, so after this week. He's got a break, and then he has Naples, and then nothing scheduled. So, very odd. I mean, I assume that maybe he's dealing with some sort of injury or something. That's why.
Why would that be a break? Like Naples is next week.
Oh wait, no, hold on. So Naples is next week, and then he has a break. Okay.
There are two events in Naples. He's signed up for both.
Wait, is he signed up? Because I just looked at it and he was only signed up for the second
one. I see both. Napoli 2. And he is, just outside the seeding. Ninth.
All right. So he's playing the two Naples and then I guess we'll see.
And then I guess go to South America again. I don't know.
It's very odd. I'm not really sure why he would choose to do this. But yeah, anyway, I don't expect much from him here. He has a very easy section, but he can't have an easy enough section these days to win matches. So I'm going for Hugo Gaston. Third seed, did okay in Braga. Obviously lost to Monteiro pretty easily, 6-4, 6-1, but you never know.
It was indoors as well, right? That was the semi that was played indoors. So we couldn't see that, and probably the conditions suit Monteiro more than Gaston.
Yeah, probably. So Gaston for me.
Okay. I'm not going for Taro Daniel again, but he had a pretty decent week. I lost to Sanchez Izquierdo. I still feel like he might be able to do it, but he would probably be a pretty big underdog against either of Monteiro and Gaston, honestly.
All right, our final tournament this week in Murcia, we have top seed Roberto Carbaez Baena plays against Pablo Yamas Ruiz, who's in with a wild card. In the second round, he potentially has Daniel Rincon, who he won the US Open, or was he in the final?
Yep, won.
So that should be interesting to see him on this level again. So also in the section, fifth seed Marco Trungheiti plays Alexander Shevchenko, and then we have Evan Furness against Javier Barranco Cosano. Next section, we have Mark Pomans as the third seed against the qualifier. Then we have two Belgian players with protected rankings in this section, which is fun to see. The first one is Joris Delors, and he plays Andrea Colarini. Second one is Jeroen Van Est, and he plays Roberto Ortega Olmedo. Final match in this section is 8 seed Matthias Borg against Jesper de Jong. Next section we have 4 seed Mario Villa Martinez against Flavio Coboli. That should be quite interesting. Then Dalibor Svrčina against Raul Brancaccio. We have 7 seed Filip Horanski against the qualifier, straight off of a final. I did not see coming that final whatsoever for him. But yeah, and he plays in the second round Nikola Kuhn or Timofey Skatov, which I'm curious to see Kuhn after his Szczecin run where he got injured. So hopefully he's back to the fitness. I want to see if he can replicate that form. Final section, we have Talon Grigspor, number 2 seed, plays Nicolas Sanchez Izquierdo in the first round. Then he potentially has Alexander Richard or wildcard Alvaro Lopez San Martin. In the second round, we have 6 seed Ramkumar Ramanathan playing Milan Jekic. And Matteo Martino plays a qualifier. All right, who stands out for you?
Yeah, as you said, Kuhn Skatov is something I'm definitely tuning into. I was honestly mostly looking at guys at the first 2 seeds. Oh, let me say before that, Rincon played a 15K last week and lost in the semis. But I don't really know what to think about it because it was so weird. They literally started the first round on Friday, I think, because of the rain. And he had to play 3 matches in a day at some point. So it got kind of crazy there. I can't remember the name of the Spanish city, but anyhow, as I probably talked about like 2 weeks ago, I'm not really expecting him to do well in the pros, at least for now. Shevchenko Drungeliti is another very good first round. I'm still waiting for that big breakthrough for Shevchenko. Maybe it's going to happen. Jesper de Jong has a very good draw, honestly. Borg hasn't been in great form. Then Polman's, you know, has his issues on clay. So I would really expect De Jong maybe to go far again. But as I said, I was mostly looking at the first 2 seats, even though Kuhn was an option, honestly. But he would have to play at the same level as in Szczecin, and with the back injury, I just have no idea if he will be able to do that. But, Grigspor has, besides Sanchez Izquierdo, Grigspor has like the weakest section I've seen in a clay challenger all year, probably. I mean, Ramanathan Zekic is going to be a bit of a mess, probably. I have no idea what Ramanathan can show on clay because, you know, he obviously plays it only a couple times a year. I think he played in Antalya at the beginning of the season. But I ended up going with Carbajes Baena. I don't like picking him, but he got me to a final in Seville, against Martinez like 3 weeks ago. And I feel like he just always brings a certain level. He won't randomly lose to Pablo Lemas Ruiz. At the same time, he's never going to overperform. He's never going to beat, I don't know, a top 50 player, but never is obviously a stretch, but you know what I mean. And there are no top 50 players here. There are no players in his section that can really blow him off the court. So I just went with Roberto Carbajes Baena.
I'm going with Talon Grigspor. Obviously, recent form, not the best. He's also not played that much. But I mean, he's had what, 3 titles this year, I think.
Yep.
Prague, Bratislava, and Amersfoort.
Amersfoort, yeah.
They all have they're all clay. They're all, I think, stronger fields than this. So I feel like I trust him here. As he said, very weak section to start with. So I'm penciling him into the quarterfinals very confidently. I'm actually taking Sharpie and just tracing over. That's how confident I am in the quarterfinals for him there. But yeah, Grigspor for the title for me. Yes.
The first round is the toughest of the first 3 for him, I guess.
That was a good week for him last week. But yeah, it's semis, but one of them is a retirement. The other one is Collarini. The Taro Daniel win is a good one. But yeah, obviously a semi-final run is a good run, but it's not the most impressive semi-final run I've ever seen. So yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, Greece were for me.
Yeah, for example, Lehechka last week in Bucharest, if he lost to Travalia, I don't know, 2-2, then we wouldn't be saying that his semi-final run was good, because the draw was simply, it fell apart. Yeah, so I guess that's where we're going to finish this. And thank you for listening. Sorry for the problems we had, but next week we're going to be back in full flight and back to do all 5 events together. So yeah, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hope all of you enjoyed this week's conversation between Damian Kust and Jakub Babro, recapping all of the action on the ATP Challenger Tour. Of course, a shout out to Damian and Jakub, as always, for taking the time to follow the Challenger Tour as closely as they do. I sincerely mean it when I say you are not going to find two people more closely following all of the action, more people more dedicated to the Challenger beat. Of course, you can also read Damian Kust's thoughts on last week's Challenger champion, 19-year-old Czech Jiří Lehechka. He wrote about Lehechka's rise here in 2021 on our website, crackrackets.com, and we're going to actually have him on the show later this week to discuss that article, to discuss some Challenger play to watch down the home stretch of the season. So be on the lookout for that content later on this week. But of course, again, recapping everything day in, day out on the Mini Break podcast feed, hoping to chat with players in San Diego and Sofia on the ATP side throughout the week, as I believe I'm going to have press access to those pressers. So be on the lookout for the From the Presser segment on our Cracked Interviews podcast feed. And of course, like, rate, subscribe, review to each of our shows to our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel as well, where this week we're diving into the history of WTA teenage success, talking about where the current 6 top 100 teenagers in the WTA game compare historically with some of the teenage successes we've seen in the past. It's going to be a long-form Great Shot podcast episode as well, so be on the lookout for that. And of course, again, like, rate, subscribe, review all of our Cracked Rackets podcasts. If you need the more immediate updates, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, we are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at Great Shot Pod. A shout out, as always, to our super producers, Max Fligner and Daniel Westa, for the of an editing job they do day in, day out. Shout out as well to our friends at Tennis Point, tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. With all of that said, for our fantastic hosts, Damian Kust and Jakub Babro, super producers Fligner and Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say. Hey, great shot, and we'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.